It's Turi Ryder on 720 WGN.
Why didn't we invite Mr. Bob Killian to join us? He's the head of Killian Branding. I'll tell you why. Because it was just, I think, a week and a half ago that one of my very favorite stores in the world got into big trouble. Seems to be bodily function night tonight on 720 WGN. They got into big trouble because, first, on the website, they listed a piece of clothing, I believe it was athletic wear, in small sizes. They called it heather gray. And in large sizes, they called it manatee gray. Manatee being basically big, giant sea animals. Right, like calling it elephant gray in a big size. So somebody called them out on it. They apologized and just changed the name of the color. Then 2 weeks later, or maybe just a week later, they had a little problem with their footwear collection. I'm thinking Mr. Killian may be familiar with this. Welcome, Bob Killian, to 720 WGN. Are you familiar with the story here, the misbranded footwear?
The footwear, no. I'm well up on the manatee gray, though.
Well, apparently, this very same store created a line of sandals, which they titled by a very exotic Spanish name, which turned out to mean urine.
This is not typical Target behavior, I got to tell you.
Well, I was a little surprised. I thought, is this a hoax? Is this a joke? But it came from a reputable, came from, I believe, Adweek was the place where I first read about it. And I can't, how does a business fall into such terrible bad luck?
Well, you know, they did have an explanation on the whole manatee situation, which was pretty interesting. Because basically, over the last couple of decades, those are some of the smartest guys in retail. The Target people are really sharp.
And their store. Can I just say, I love their store. To make accessible, inexpensive, great design. How genius was that? I love that store. Go ahead, please.
They really separated themselves from the other big boxes. You know, as soon as they put in the Michael Graves teapot, you knew they were doing the right thing, the tea kettle. And
yes.
They were always smart guys. And actually, the whole manatee thing had something of an explanation, because they used the color manatee gray for kitchen towels and men's T-shirts and other sort of things. Where they got in trouble was they had two different buying groups for this one dress. And it was a gray dress. And in the petite size or the regular missing size, it was heather dark gray. And somehow a different buyer was in charge of the plus size dress. And he called it by the name they use on other products, which is manatee gray, which is a little bit thoughtless.
Can I just say that as a woman who has three sizes of clothes in her closet all the time, optimistic, realistic, and don't care to discuss it, I don't want anything that I wear named after an animal that is bigger than my car.
Yeah, as lovable as fantasies may be, and I have to tell you, I have a daughter who absolutely adored manatees when she was a kid, and we had to go look at them in Florida and all that. But it is called sometimes a sea cow.
Yes.
What I think is the interesting part of it is that Target remained very smart, because this was pointed out by a person tweeting in New Jersey who noticed this and made a point about it. And Target jumped in with profuse apologies and promises of action and all sorts of reaction, which was very healthy and very smart, so that even the original tweeter said, boy, I'm going to go shopping at Target. These guys really know how to respond in a crisis and all that. And
you know what? That's true. If you have
better.
If you have good crisis response, it really is true. You can end up in a better position than you were before the error occurred. That's absolutely true. I've seen it myself. Hotels that intervene when something goes wrong, or my cable company used to have this one guy that if something was wrong, I called him once, bless his heart, he called me from his Thanksgiving dinner because my cable company decided I was a spammer and pulled out all my internet. And he saw me complaining about this and called and fixed, and he downloaded special software, fixed it. I used to rave about this company because and where before I had been eviscerating them, because he did, this one man did such a good job of damage control. So you're absolutely right. Let's talk a little bit, if you can hold on a moment. I want to talk about branding faux pas, branding that shows your product in the best light, and branding where you just scratch your head and you think to yourself, what on earth, you know, whose research group came up with this? It's just nutty. So hold on if you would. We'll talk some more. This is, you do this for a living. This is what you do. Bob Killian, the head of Killian Branding. So he can maybe explain how some of the stuff that you use gets named what it gets named. And hopefully he can come up with why the certain big box store ended up with a sandal named Urine. Bob?
Well, they want you to know that you're in the right store.
When you sit down to do research on branding, how does it happen? If I have a product and no idea what to name it, and I bring it to you and I say, I've got, I don't know, tell a story. You don't have to put a name on it, but tell some good stories about how you've named some things.
Well, naming is a real neglected art, particularly for startups. You get, you know, three guys who want to break off from Merrill Lynch and start their own brokerage firm. So they wind up calling themselves, they don't want to spend the money on professional naming or research even. And so they decide, well, we'll save a buck here. We've got other fish to fry, and we'll just name it, CLM Associates after each of their first initials, which is Curly, Larry, and Moe. And they wind up with a name that doesn't mean anything to anybody and can't be remembered and can't be heard over the phone. So it's easy to go astray. And even companies that have resources and are introducing products or product line extensions sometimes go astray because they haven't really thought through meeting all the obligations that they need to make the name work. Very important rule that we insist on for clients is that we want to come up with a name that if it's told to you over the phone once, you'd be able to write it out and remember it. And that goes astray way too often.
Well, my little company is a terrible disaster as far as that goes. I mean, I have to spell it 65 ways. But then again, if nobody ever finds it, that's all right. But yeah, it's terrible. It's really, when you come up with a name that people go, is that S? Is that F? Is that what? And you've done yourself a big disservice there. You've missed an opportunity to be remembered.
Yeah, and, you know, the way most of the business that you're going to acquire in the next year or so, and this is true of practically everybody, is going to be digital. So if you want to have people remember your name and then seek it out, well, if the name of your company doesn't coincide with a .com, then you're going to lose them because that's automatically what they're going to write down. So it can't be a .biz, .net, .crapola, or anything like that. Because if it's not a .com, you don't get a second chance with that.
That's true.
And if it's got puns in it or unusual spellings, we have a list of about 14 rules I put on our website that are criteria for naming, and very, very few people can meet all of those obligations with it. And so there are opportunities missed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what are some of the rules if people can't go to your website right now? What are some of the key things? You've illuminated a few of them, but where are some of the products that you see out in the world where you think, what were they thinking? They're not clients of yours, we're going to assume. So what are some of the things that you've come across where you've thought, this one is a big mistake?
Well, the mistakes run all over the place, and a lot of it has to do with being unmemorable. A lot of businesses, startup businesses, but a great many of them, will use, you know, three initials as their name, or they'll resort to, Paragon and, superlatives in there. It says, the peerless this and the wonderful that. And they ring hollow.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you a couple of names that I love, by the way, just so you know that, I pay attention to these things. Okay? So I love the name that Swiffer chose for their Swiffer.
Yes.
I just thought that was genius. The sound of it shows what it does. It sounds kind of like Swiff. It sounds like it, you know, it kind of scoops like Sniffer, like it sniffs out the dirt. It sounds cute. I just love that name. I would practically buy the thing just because it sounds like what it does plus cute. So I like that one. Yeah.
It's a brilliant name, and you can spell it after hearing it once.
Yeah. I mean, you might think Swifter, and if someone said no, just Swiffer with no T, you would get it. And then the other product that I thought was genius was Larry Ellison's company, Oracle Software. I mean, that's just a brilliant thing. If you know what an oracle is, it's something you can consult to tell you what the future will be. And I just thought that was brilliant. Here's one that I never did understand, and I still don't understand. What the heck were they thinking when they named that electronic game the Wii?
Well, it must mean something wonderful in Japanese, because it doesn't work so well here. But
And it's embarrassing. I mean, find an adult man who wants to say, yeah, I'm going to go play with my Wii now.
I'm going to go to the store and take a Wii home.
Right. It's just absurd. I mean, the best interpretation is that it sounds little.
Yeah, well, it's a small virtue.
Are you someone who always liked to play with language and words when all your life? Is that fun for you?
Yes, I try to learn, how to be polite in about, 30 languages, just enough to say hello, goodbye, thank you, and you're welcome to waiters, that sort of thing.
So, but language, our language, English, has that always been a playground for you? Something that you found pleasure in manipulating words in English?
I majored in it. The language is at the heart of memorability when it comes to branding. A picture's worth 1,000 words, but the right combination of words, the Nikes just do it. Those three words are enduring and powerful and meaningful in ways that no picture of, sweaty accomplishments can ever reach. They work well together when you get them both, but it's that combination of words, M&M's, melt in your mouth, not in your hands. Well, it's not really a problem being solved. It's just a wonderful collection of words. The quicker picker-upper, which they've now abandoned, by the way.
That's a drag.
Foolishly. Was a fun thing to say and a kind of memorable incantation that gave it sort of a supernatural quality to picking up the slime or whatever it is you were scooping off your kitchen counter.
Or the hotel room where the NFL recruits are staying, I suppose. If you could hold, I don't know how much time you have, but we're coming to news. But I would love to know. Speaking of the branding of products as what they are and fun words to say, if you've ever, I have more questions for you. Can you hold on with us?
Sure, be happy.
Oh, that would be great. This is Bob Killian. You're listening to him. He's the head of Killian Branding. What he does is figure out what things should be called. Paula, is there a product that you, and Bob, welcome back to WGN. Is there a name of a product that you like or dislike particularly, Paula?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I know there is. I can't think what. Give me a minute here.
I'll give you a minute. I will. Bob, thanks for hanging on. I had to ask, I have a question for you about focus groups and branding.
Mm-hmm.
While I was listening to Paula's news, I was thinking of like how well and how poorly car names can go. Like I love the name Tesla. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it just sounds cool and spacey and modern. But the same sort of sound, if you name a car a Passat, it sounds like... It sounds like the other thing, So,
and unless you own an Acura, you can't tell me the names of the models that they have.
There's
many different models of Acura, and they're all such anonymous names that they disappear. And the only people who can distinguish among them are people who actually own one.
Yeah, I would have no idea. That's true.
Yeah. You know, a BMW is a 300 series, 500 series, 700 series. It makes sense. The, you know, Dodge Ram means something. And you know, there's some level of anticipation that this brand name will communicate. But Acura has the AZ6 or the L2, whatever. And it's like, this is our most advanced LT ever. And like, what? What was the old one? Who knows? You know, is that your top of the line model? Your bottom? They never had the hang of it.
They never do. That's true. And if you compare that to the Lexus, which of course sounds like luxury to people, you know, when you hear Lexus, you hear deluxe, delight, delicious. When you hear Lexus, it sounds yummy. You want one. Even before you know what one is, you want one. And then there are names that I'm sure get thrown out in the testing phase. Can you talk about some products where everybody on the advertising team thought it was a brilliant name, and then you sent it to a group of people and they mocked you to your two-way mirrored faces? What were some that you can think of that were notorious flops before they ever hit the showroom or the label?
Well, you know, some of them, you do tend to weed them out early on and early in the whole process. And the ones that then flop, oftentimes it's because the name that was trying to represent something that the product really wasn't.
Oh.
Or that the differentiator that you were hoping to build into it didn't mean much to the audience that was out there. I remember a number of years ago, we helped introduce a product for SOS, that it was a kitchen cleaner, you know, that you was to fight Formula 409 and the like. But it was made of all kitchen food-safe ingredients. So there was bicarbonate of soda, there was lemon juice and all that stuff. It was safe to be around kids. And the whole idea was, you know, you could drink the stuff. It was not poisonous or whatever. And we made some progress with it. It was called Kitchen Safe. And then Walmart liked it, and they put it in, and they did whole big, you know, end aisles with it. And the product failed miserably because what we were promising is something that the buyers of kitchen sprays didn't care about.
Huh.
Did you realize that, you know, your Formula 409 is you know, toxic? Yeah, it's really effective.
So people just assumed that if it's poisonous, it must work better.
They would use small tactical thermonuclear weapons on on their stovetop if they thought it would kill those germs. But there's probably several germs on that thing, and you know, will this kitchen safe, will it disinfect? No. Oh, well, forget that.
Well, give me the poison. Yeah, give me the leaded version.
Give me the high test, you know, glowing in the dark, absolutely kill everything within 100 yards. They love that.
There's a time and a place for that. I have learned. There's a time and a place to put on the breathing mask and just nuke your oven. Paula has some products with names that she likes and dislikes. Paula, which are the ones you like and don't like?
Well, these are two that I like and I dislike the product itself, but I can't figure out the names. Why?
Oh,
Spam and Treat. The potted meat, the canned meats.
There's a canned meat called Treat.
Yes, Treet. And then, of course, there's Spam.
Yeah,
that's an ugly name, Crete.
Treat.
T-R-E-E-T.
Yes.
T-R-E-E-T.
It's
Treat.
Basically the same thing, like a potted meat or like a canned ham.
Mm.
Ugh.
Well, Spam has a very long, long history. And it's now made by Hormel, I think, still.
Yeah.
And it is enormously popular in Hawaii. It's like their national dish. They eat more Spam per person there than any place in the universe. It's like, oh yeah, Spam. That's what we'll have for dinner tonight.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you don't have to heat it or cool it, and if a hurricane comes, you could live on it, and it wouldn't, yeah, you know, yeah. If I could see that.
And you could use it to wax your water skis or something.
I don't know. I've never eaten Spam, so I have no idea. But
I haven't had it since I was a kid, but I think I could probably remember what it tastes like fried.
Now, what about when companies go for that exotic foreign sounding name? What do you do to make sure? Oh, named after Nikolai Tesla, the Tesla. That's true. But I don't think I knew that. Somebody points out. But I don't know if it means anything.
Science, yeah.
Sorry?
If you're fond of 19th century scientists, Tesla is a bigger name than Edison.
Yes, the Tesla effect. I remember. Though it's the thing where there's even a play, I think, called the Tesla effect. And isn't that the thing where the sound starts to change when you're near or closer? Isn't that
You're thinking of the Doppler effect.
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I completely, Nikolai Tesla, I'll have to look up because I've obviously completely confused him with somebody else. I apologize. Hey, when I'm wrong, I'm happy to admit it. So foreign names. When you give your product a name that sounds like it will be exotic and fantastic because it's foreign sounding, what should you be careful to avoid?
Well, you have to be careful that it doesn't become impossible to spell. Fructis is fine because you can still spell it, although it sounds foreign and exotic, and that's okay. But if you get into things that, French spellings of things, you're really running the risk if people won't remember it. And also, you have to have a certain, you can't just pick foreign names because you've run out of good ones in English and you're just desperate. It has to have some relation to the brand story that's involved. And you want something fairly exotic if you're talking about cosmetics or you're talking about perfumes. Foreign names lend themselves to that. A perfume called Axel Grease wouldn't work very well, but whatever the French word for Axel Grease is, probably would.
Well, you have to sort of be careful with some. I mean, I remember the famous story of the Nova, the Chevy Nova,
mm-hmm.
which
is mostly myth, by the way.
It's not true.
It's highly exaggerated because the word in Spanish for a Nova, meaning like an exploding star, is Nova. So the idea that Nova doesn't go with some sort of branding mistake. Isn't quite true. In fact, the car was, fairly...
It's very popular amongst Spanish-speaking people. I do know that.
So, but it makes a great story. It just doesn't happen to be particularly authentic.
Well, take that, Wall Street Journal, which is where I first read that story many, many years ago. So,
yeah. Oh, it circulates a lot. You'll see it all over the place.
An urban myth. I have to, and another great product name, Raid. What a great name that is.
Yeah. Anytime you can get away with a one-syllable name that you can still own, obviously it's been around for years and years. You know, there are no four-letter URLs left available at all. Letters, numbers, combinations. You can't think of a combination of letters and numbers or in length, and you can register that as a .com. It's gone.
Really?
Yep.
Now, is it true that people hoard .com extensions? They just buy like a million things that they think that somebody would want someday, and they sit on them like a chicken on an egg?
Yeah, they are they're poachers and they're hoarders, and they sit on them. And it was profitable in the late 90s, and somebody sold business.com for say, $5 million or something like that. And the price has been plummeting ever since, so it's hardly worth it anymore. But every once in a while, somebody will make a few bucks on it.
I know with political campaigns, that you try to make sure you get every permutation of your candidate's name. At this point, every time they introduce another extension, .biz, .com, .pro. It's just like a tax on your business because you have to go buy it to make sure nobody else buys it and uses your name or your business name to do something you don't want it to do. But my favorite experience with that is when you go to buy a .pro extension, You have to prove that you're a dot pro. You have to prove that you're a pro at something, which if you're a beautician, you can show them your beauty license. But if you're me, for example, like, what do you want? You know, you want 20 years of press clippings? They didn't believe that a professional what? It was hilarious. You could be a professional race car driver, and you can't prove that you're a dot pro. They wanted your business license in order to sell you that extension.
Well, you know what? Nobody's going to go looking for it either. People recognize, they recognize .com and they recognize .org. To some extent, they'll go along with .net for things that are obviously networking networked. But I think the whole scam of .biz, .tv, .pro is a money-making scheme because, you know, if you're General Motors, then you have to have General Motors .anything you name they have to buy. And a lot of people feel obliged, or it's their only way out. It's the only way they can find the name they want. But it's pretty much a scam because, you know, if you tell somebody you are Turi.pro, and they'll sit down and do this, they type Turi.com.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And well, you can definitely find me at TuriRider.com. I own that. And fortunately, I have a weird name because there just wasn't a big run on the Turi Rider extension there. I did, for some strange reason. And I thank my mother for that. You have been an absolute pleasure, Bob Killian of Chicago. And I really hope that anytime I have like another cool advertising question, I don't know if you could figure this out. I love advertising. I follow it like a groupie. And ever since Jerry Delafamina wrote from those wonderful folks who brought you Pearl Harbor, I've been a total fan of what you do and your business. And thank you for explaining how Target got in such big trouble with their manatee thing. And I'm sure you guys had a laugh over at the coffee machine about it. And I'm sorry about their sandals that are named the Spanish name for urine. And I hope they figure out a way to fix that. Although, you know, if they're really going to go down that road and they want a whole line of sandals, they can have a sandal with the Spanish name for oozing sore and itchy scab. And I mean, the footwear possibilities are endless. Bunion.
The bunion might be nice, you know, especially for a soft shoe, I suppose.
Yes, it sounds like a big improvement over the urine. Thank you, Bob. It was good speaking with you. I hope you'll come back one day. That's Bob Killian. He is the owner of Killian Branding. You're listening to him on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN.
It's Turi Ryder on 720 WGN.